morning, everybody, and welcome to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee of the Minnesota House of Representatives for this Friday, March 25th. Our first item of business is to take the roll. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle present. Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg present.
Petersburg present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr present. Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi present. Representative Elkins.
Present.
Elkins present. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Frederick present. Representative Hausman.
Present.
Hausman present. Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich present.
Heinrich present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick present. Representative Mason. Representative Mason. Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy. Representative Nelson.
Present.
Nelson present. Representative Olson.
Olson present.
Olson present. Representative Richardson.
Present.
Richardson present. Representative Torkelson.
Torkelson present.
Torkelson present. Representative West.
West present.
West present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business is approval of minutes from yesterday's meeting. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the minutes of yesterday's meeting.
So the minutes of March 24th are moved. Is there discussion? Seeing none, we will take a vote on the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those in favor, the motion prevails, or all those opposed, the motion prevails. Okay, members, just a quick announcement here before we get started. Appreciate everybody's attendance here on a Friday. We are going to hear three bills, and all three are being laid over. The last bill from Representative Bernardi related to active transportation will be laid over in our committee for possible inclusion. The first two bills, House File 4242 and 2295, are being laid over for two reasons. Number one, they both need fiscal notes. Number two, they both would eventually need to go to the Judiciary Committee. But we are hearing them as extensively as we would any bill that we would vote on today, because they are large and complicated and important bills. And so we welcome questions and comments by committee members. But our first one is House File 4242, Representative Long. And again, the motion is that I will lay over House File 4242 and to remain in the Transportation Committee for now. Representative Long, welcome, and please tell us about House File 4242.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one author's amendment. I don't know if you'd like to dispense with that now or later.
Let's do that now. Let's get the bill in the shape that you would like it in. I will move the A1 amendment, Representative Long.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. This is just a technical amendment to correct a change that was brought to our attention after the bill had been introduced.
Okay. Is there discussion to the A1 amendment? All right, members, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All of those opposed, the motion prevails. And members, we have House File 4242 as amended before us. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nearly 500 Minnesotans died on our streets and highways last year, the highest level since 2007. Speeding was the most common contributing factor in fatal crashes. This bill supports a pilot of speed safety cameras in Minnesota to provide another tool to make our roadways safer. Speed safety cameras are a proven safety measure around the country. They are effective because drivers know that they will receive a citation if they speed. The Federal Highway Administration says that speed safety cameras on urban arterials can reduce injury crashes up to 47%, and they recommend them as a proven safety countermeasure. More than 100 communities in 18 states have speed safety camera programs. MnDOT's 2022 Work Zone Speed Management Study recommends a speed safety camera pilot in highway work zones, and I know we'll be hearing more from Representative Bernardi about that. This bill would also support that pilot program. And we've also heard interest in speed safety cameras from some local communities. The League of Minnesota Cities supports cities being able to use traffic enforcement cameras. And this bill would also support a local speed safety camera pilot at high crash locations near schools, where we know there's a particularly acute interest in making sure that folks are obeying speeding limits. Speed safety camera technology is reliable and effective, as has been shown in many communities around the country. I know we've never had speed safety cameras in Minnesota, which is why this bill starts with a time-limited pilot with important requirements for independent evaluation and two legislative reports. It's also very important that when we implement speed safety cameras, we do so fairly, equitably, and that we protect privacy. So this bill would do that in a number of ways. One, tickets could only be given for drivers going over 10 miles per hour above the speed limit. So we're focusing on the most egregious and dangerous speeding. Citations are set at $40 with no additional fees. Violations do not go on the individual's driving record and cannot be grounds to revoke or suspend a driver's license, with the exception of commercial driver's licenses. People who receive a speed safety camera citation may opt to take a free traffic safety course in lieu of paying one fine. All locations where the cameras are operating must have advanced warning signage and be listed on a public website. Each program must start with a one-month period of warning tickets before citations are given, and managing agencies must do a public information campaign before the launch. Also, to help protect privacy, the bill requires that speed safety cameras can only take a picture of the rear license plate and must not record people in a way that makes them identifiable. Cameras also can only record if the system is identifying a potential speeding violation. Vehicle owners can challenge citations and are not liable if their vehicle was stolen or ownership transferred before the violation. And only trained public speed enforcement agents can issue citations and must verify the violation before issuing. We need to make our roadways safer, and this bill explores an important tool to address unsafe speeding near schools and work zones that often lead to tragic outcomes. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Chairman Long. And I just was reminded during your introductory comments that it feels like a long time ago now, but the second week of session, we had an entire week of informational hearings about this very issue of safety and speeding. We had focus on pedestrians one day and just overall safety the previous day. So I think your bill very much keeps in that theme. So our first testifier is Ethan Fawley. Mr. Fawley, welcome to the Transportation Committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. My name is Ethan Fawley. I am the Vision Zero Program Coordinator for the City of Minneapolis. Thank you, Representative Long, for bringing forward this bill. I just want to echo a couple and reiterate a couple of the points that he made and expand on a couple other things here. So in Minneapolis, like cities around the state and country, frankly, we are having a real surge in challenges related to speeding, and that's had disastrous outcomes on our roadways. Last year, we also in the city had the most fatal crashes since 2008. And when you look at the crash reports, it's likely more than 70% of them involved speeding. It's a real challenge, and we need additional tools to be able to address this. Speed safety cameras, we support this because of how proven they've been in dozens of reports in many different locations around the country. This has been studied a lot, and it's been proven really effective. That said, recognize also that there are concerns with this technology, and we need to make sure to regulate it and manage it well to protect privacy, to make sure it's fair and equitable. And so what you see in this bill is really trying to bring forward many of the best practices that have been implemented across the country. I know in a minute, we're going to have Frank Dauma from the University of Minnesota, who's going to speak as well. His team has done a lot of research on this topic, which he'll speak more to. And there's a lot of other research around the country and best practices. And so we've really tried to address the concerns that come out around this technology to make sure that this is a realistic way that we can implement this successfully in Minnesota to save lives while making sure that it's fair for all Minnesotans. And so within that, I also want to recognize that Representative Bernardi's bill will be heard right after this. Just wanted to draw attention to a couple pieces there, just so there's some understanding about some of the differences between the bills and mostly a lot of similarities too. And so just sort of clarify for the committee on that. There is a handout here in the packet for today that covers some of the comparison of the two bills, just to make you aware on that. So the main difference is that Representative Long's bill includes the local option pilot as well as the work zone speed safety camera pilot. And so obviously as a local community, city of Minneapolis is very interested in having the local option as well. We certainly support the work zone safety option as well and are glad to see both in Representative Long's bill. Other than that, I think there's a lot more that's similar and unites the two bills in terms of how the program would function and be managed to, again, to get at the goal of reducing unsafe behavior to improve traffic safety while still being fair and equitable and protecting privacy. And so with all of that, I just wanted to thank Representative Long for bringing this forward and say the city of Minneapolis would be very interested in using this to try a local pilot. And so we can see how it works in our state and our community. So thank you all for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Folley. And what I'd like to do, members, is we'll get through. We have three more testifiers, and then we can take questions of the author and any of the testifiers. Our next testifier is Roger Benson. Mr. Benson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. Good morning. My name is Roger Benson. I'm a heavy equipment operator for the Traffic and Parking Services Department of the City of Minneapolis Public Works. My work consists of maintaining and the installation of controlled intersections, special bike and pedestrian controlled crossings, and city lighting for roadways and pathways. Some of the issues I have experienced on the job site as well as in the job site in the last few years are a result of increased speed. In North Minneapolis, on Fremont Avenue North, this is a pedestrian streetlight corridor. I was installing pipe with a horizontal drill for lighting, a machine with no cab for protection from the elements or otherwise. The road consists of three lanes, one for parking, which we set up as our work site, one for one-way traffic southbound, and one for bikes. Speed on this road increases around noon, and one day speeders had to dodge slow traffic by entering our work site, hitting cones, and sending them airborne. One of them were several feet from my head. Another incident was a car traveling well over the speed limit. We figured at least 45 to 50 miles an hour that entered the work site and caused two of my fellow employees to run for their lives toward the boulevard and into the front yard of a house. On several occasions, I ended up shutting down the work by noon because of the accelerated speed. It was no longer a safe working environment for anyone. The work that needed to be done was not worth our lives. It delayed the project considerably. We did our best to pinch the road down to the minimum width of 10 feet, had trucks in place to absorb potential accidents, and used cones to line both sides of the lane to induce slow controlled driving speeds. Because there was no accountability for their actions, there was no concern for the public. It made little impact. I believe that having something in place to show the public that accountability is evident there will be a second thought given to their driving speeds. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and representatives.
Thank you so much, Mr. Benson, and thank you for your work for the public. Our next testifier is Sarah Risser. Ms. Risser, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. So I am Sarah Risser, and Chair Hornstein and members of the committee, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. So road safety is important and deeply personal to me. I sat beside my 18-year-old son, Henry, in a state of shock and injury after a negligent driver who was going too fast crossed the center line and hit our car head on. Henry took the brunt of the impact. He sustained severe head trauma, and he died at the scene. It is unspeakably tragic that Henry was killed with such horrific violence. His life was promising. He was smart and motivated, home for winter break after finishing his first semester at Bowdoin College. He loved playing his violin and rowing with friends on the Mississippi River. He was proud of his hometown of St. Paul. Henry brought us a lot of happiness. He had a big heart. He should be with us. My husband Nathan and I struggle to believe we will ever be truly happy again. Recently, Nathan turned to me and said, "Losing a child is like being punched in the gut every single day for the rest of your life." And I think that's pretty accurate. Henry left out of turn. We have no choice but to go forward without him, weighted down by a life sentence of grief. That his death was completely avoidable exacerbates the pain of the loss. After losing Henry, I pledged to be the best driver I could be. I realized that for me personally, the only thing that approaches the horror of losing a child to a reckless driver would be to be the at-fault driver. So now I give my full attention to driving. I come to a complete stop. I honor all speed limits. But I haven't always been so careful. In my 30s, I sometimes continued driving into an intersection after the light had turned yellow, so that I was still in the intersection on a red light. It felt normal. It seemed like everyone was breaking traffic rules to varying degrees. I didn't fully appreciate what was at stake. I didn't fully appreciate that I was operating a vehicle so heavy that it could kill another person. And it was around this time that I relocated to a new city, one with red light cameras. When I arrived at my new home, I continued driving in the same lackadaisical manner, thinking that if there wasn't a cop nearby, it didn't matter. And then I got a ticket in the mail with clear images of my car in the intersection on a red light. And then I got a second. And then I realized there was no gaming the system. Cop or no cop, I would get ticketed every single time. I repeat, every single time. And that put an end to my dangerous behavior. We are talking about speed safety cameras today, not red light cameras, but the similarities are relevant. My experience convinced me that traffic enforcement cameras work. They incentivize people to change sloppy behaviors quickly. And we need new tools today more than ever. We are facing a growing public health crisis of road fatalities. Since 2010, fatalities of vulnerable road users, including children, cyclists, and pedestrians, have outpaced total road fatalities, a trend that corresponds with the rise in popularity of very large and heavy SUVs and pickup trucks. Our roads are getting more dangerous, and our safety policies are not keeping up. In closing, I want to underscore that it's not okay to shrug off violent and needless death simply because it happened in road traffic. And I can assure everyone in this room that dismissing road traffic victims as the cost of driving has become the norm. Fatal crashes are not inevitable, but the policies we have in place today, the same policies that have been in place for years, aren't working. We need new tools, and they are available. Speed safety cameras have been shown to work, and they should be an important component of our road safety strategy. Too many beloved human beings are dying on Minnesota's roads. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Risser, for sharing your story, and I'm so sorry about your beloved Henry. I think this is a very, very important way to honor him and his memory, and I thank you for being at our committee and for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Our next testifier is Frank Dauma, familiar to many of us as the a director of the Center for Transportation Studies, I believe, at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. I hope I got your title right, Mr. Duma, but welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and your correct title, I assume, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the authors and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak today. I am Frank Dauma. My official long title is Director of State and Local Policy and Outreach at the Humphrey School
That's
of
what
Public
it is.
Affairs.
Thank you.
Yes, it's the Institute for Urban and Regional Infrastructure Finance. And just to keep going to make sure we cover the Center for Transportation Studies, I have an appointment as a research scholar there as well. Now, on to the more important parts of my discussion. I do have some slides, if it's okay that I share. Otherwise, I am happy to just present them verbally.
If we have the technology set up for sharing slides, that would be well. That would be in order.
Okay, I will do my best here to make the computer go through the proper hoops. Let's try this one more time. There we go. You all can see one slide about identifying issues related to deploying automated enforcement or automatic enforcement in Minnesota.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. I will be talking about research that I have done in the 2010s. This is part of a number of research projects that have been done at the University of Minnesota, beginning with work that Professor John Adams did prior to this, and also included is work that has been led by Dr. Nicole Morris at the university's Human First Laboratory, and the work that I am doing was largely supported by, or that I will be discussing was largely supported by two federal grants of the Center for Excellence in Rural Safety and the Roadway Safety Institute. In talking about the effectiveness of automated speed enforcement, it comes to the point that research shows the best way to deter negative behavior is to have very certain severity of the enforcement. And automated enforcement speed cameras allow that kind of certainty to exist much more than the current method of needing to deploy peace officers to be able to actually issue tickets when there is a law that is broken. Speeding contributes to the frequency and severity of crashes. When we were doing this research, we noted that speeding was a factor in fatal crashes in 2014, more so than driving under the influence or distracted driving, and that it impacted roughly one-third of roadway fatalities in 2015. I'll note that the Minnesota Department of Public Safety noted in the last year that this trend continues to this day. Research that we also did noted that automated speed enforcement could lead to research has shown a 20% reduction in crashes and a 10 to 20% reduction in fatalities. Further, research from around the world looking at empirical studies of crashes and travel behavior before and after automated speed enforcement was implemented, we see that the reductions go from 10% all the way up to nearly half of all crashes being reduced after the implementation of automated enforcement technologies. Finally, we did a survey of Minnesotans in 2012 asking about where automated speed enforcement would be most supported. And as you can see that we had a majority of respondents were very supportive for the idea of deploying this in the situations that are discussed in these bills today, that is in school zones and in work zones. I'll note that the aspects discussed here, and the reason why we don't see it right now is because a red light camera program in Minneapolis was struck down by the Minnesota Supreme Court because Minneapolis was trying to do something that the state of Minnesota does not do, which is to hold the driver or the owner of the vehicle liable for the actions of the driver by taking a picture just of the license plate in order to protect the privacy of the driver. Since the state did not allow that kind of action, Minneapolis could not do so. And so it is gratifying to see these bills correct that part of the enforcement opportunity by the state so that cities can proceed to implement should they so choose. I will also note that the state does allow this kind of enforcement for other infractions, such as passing a school bus with the stop arm extended. Finally, from our research around the country, we see that the opportunity to have a lower level of enforcement with adequate warning and the opportunity to respond are ways to additionally gain support for these actions, particularly in these critical areas. Again, I want to thank the committee and the authors, and I will just close by referring to the studies that I cited from here. Be happy to provide additional study citations for those who may be interested. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, Mr. Dalma, and all your work at the Humphrey School. Members, that concludes our group of testifiers. And members, if you have any questions of any of the testifiers or the author, now would be the time to raise your hand and I will call on you. And we have our first question coming from Representative Petersburg. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm good. I hit the wrong button at first. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to make sure that all my comments are not inferred that I am against safety, because I've been a strong proponent of everybody understanding that when you get behind the wheel of a car, you actually are in front of a lethal weapon. And we should take that seriously in all cases and in all situations. And so I'm very much a strong supporter of safety and trying to eliminate some of these senseless issues. But I do have some concerns. Two questions. One in regards to commercial license, but the other one is about the constitutionality question that Mr. Dalma just talked about. And I'm wondering if he could clarify how this legislation and others have gotten around the 2007 striking down of the Minneapolis red light citations program. If he could clarify how this fixes that.
Okay. I'm sorry, that was directed to the author. Okay.
Either one.
Okay. Yes, I'd be happy to answer that, Representative Petersburg. Thank you for the question. So I think, as Mr. Dalma pointed out, the Supreme Court decision was about the authority of Minneapolis to implement it under state law, not about the constitutionality. So this bill would solve the authority question, which is that we would make clear under state law for the purposes of this pilot that local governments could move forward.
If I could have a couple of follow-ups, Mr.
Of course, Representative Petersburg, proceed.
Thank you. So how does that imply then to companies that are renting a vehicle or leasing a vehicle? They technically are the owners, and yet the owner, the driver, is the one responsible for that. I would think that there's still some issue in regards to whether or not there's a liability crime created with this new particular authority. To Representative Long, please.
Chairman Long, proceed.
Yes, we do have language in there. I was trying to pull it up quickly, but I don't know if I'll be able to in time to deal with those circumstances. So if it's a leased vehicle, then the individual will have a defense and will not be liable.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, if I could have
Representative Petersburg, one more.
Thank you. The other question is regards to the commercial license. I know that commercial licenses are actually controlled and regulated through federal law, and we talked about not going on driver's records and citations versus not getting them. What parameters are different between commercial licenses and regular licenses and how this would work? Does commercial license require to go on the record or not?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, the commercial license issue was brought to us by the State Patrol, and I think Mr. Folley might have more information on that than I might defer to him.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, Representative Petersburg. Yes, the author's amendment today addressed that issue and confirmed with the State Patrol that that issue would be addressed. So with that, we are preempted by federal law from having it not go on a driver's record and also being able to have a commercial driver's license holder be able to take a class in lieu of a citation. So the amendment addressed both of those issues just to make sure that we are complying with state and federal law related to CDL holders.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Okay, so that really gets right to the point, though, of not knowing who the driver is, because if the CDL driver owns the vehicle but they aren't driving it, and you're forcing it to go on their record and to force an issue, isn't that creating a double standard there? Because federal law requires it to go against the driver, even though he wasn't driving. And I think that should be an issue of concern. And so, Mr. Chair, I would just say that in itself is an issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your questions, Representative Petersburg. Representative Long, did you want to respond?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I found the language I was looking for. So in Section 8, adding the new subdivision 14, paragraph A3, if the driver can show that it was being leased by somebody else, and they're not liable. So I would think that would, my interpretation of this is that it would not apply for a CDL situation as well, if you could show that it was somebody else driving the vehicle.
Okay, that's very helpful, Chair Long.
We have Mr. Chair, I just got to say, but how are you going to do that? Because you don't have any way of notifying who is driving the car. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. We have these hearings to vet these issues and questions. Did you want to respond last time?
I'm fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We have three more questions, and we need to really get to a couple more bills today. So I'm going to just call on Representative Mason, Representative Olson, and Representative Torkelson, and then we will move on and lay this bill over. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a couple of comments. In the past, I know I have been extremely reluctant to vote for the use of cameras, but to my mind, what's happening in our society right now just goes beyond anything that we can condone. I know that I've been, just in my community, at two times, I've been at a red light and somebody went through the intersection. And was it late last year, some of us went to the construction zone in Maple Grove and were told that people were going through the construction zone at 100 miles per hour. I don't see how anybody can possibly justify that. I mean, that is so irresponsible. And as it happened, the person that was driving the vehicle I was in, I had mentioned that in Burnsville, we had had a death in a construction zone. As it happened, the driver of the vehicle knew those people. So I will be voting for this. We have to be able to do something to just curtail the absolutely irresponsible and outrageous behavior. And when it comes to people, the questions about who's in the car, I guess my thought is, if it's your vehicle, you still have to be responsible for who is using it. Not that you have to be charged with anything, but I'm thinking people, again, are maybe getting a little bit too lenient in who uses their car. And maybe this would help as well. I mean, it doesn't solve the lease problem, but I think you can track down who leased the car. So I don't see that as being a problem either. So again, I think we have a responsibility to do something about all this dangerous behavior. Thank you.
Thank you for that statement, Representative Mason. We will go now to Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this question would be directed to the author of the bill here. I've got a CDL. My wife does not. Would I have to, according to your language, lease my truck to my wife, who is also an owner of this vehicle, to ensure that I don't get charged should she accidentally or on purpose perform one of these actions and get pictured on the camera? I'm incredibly concerned about this for all of our commercial truck drivers.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Olson. It's a good question. I am looking at our limitations, and there is a limitation for if another person is convicted for the same violation. I could follow up with you on whether or not that would deal with the circumstance that you're raising. I think it's a fair question.
Representative Olson, did you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the author. Thank you, Representative Long. I think that that's one real major sticking point, that if we can hammer that one out, we might actually have something here. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Olson. So I'm going to add Representative West to the queue. But we're really going to take, in the interest of time, the questions or comments from Representative Torkelson and then Representative West, and then we will move on. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My original question was actually identical to Representative Olson's question, in that I have a CDL endorsement on my license, and it wouldn't necessarily be my wife. Anybody could borrow my car for some reason, or a daughter or a relative could be driving. Does that put my CDL at risk, Representative Long?
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, I'll have the same answer I have for Representative Olson, which is that I think that the limitations we have would address that, but I'm happy to follow up. Since this is a new amendment, I haven't had the chance to fully vet how it would interact with our exemptions. So I've had a CDL in the past as well, and I appreciate the question. I think it's an important one, and I'll try to get an answer to you and Representative Olson.
Thank you for that, Chairman Long.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, first a comment, Mr. Chair. If you're not identifying the driver, and if the owner of the vehicle has a CDL and you're required to issue a ticket to that owner, I think you've got a real problem. A second, another question, though. Who will be issuing the tickets under this particular scenario?
Chairman Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Torkelson. So it's and the bill specified that it can only be a trained public speed enforcement agent and that they have to verify the violation before issuing the ticket.
Well, Representative Long, does that mean it's an officer or just somebody who's been authorized?
Chairman Long.
I might defer to Mr. Folley for how it would be implemented at the city level.
Yeah, the language, and I can try to find the exact wording here so folks can point to it. It does provide the option for local communities to train someone who's not a licensed peace officer to do that work. That is in recognition of the realities we have across the state and limited capacity for licensed peace officers, the important work that they have to do in public safety, and the recognition that other cities and states have had success having other licensed public officers who are not licensed peace officers be able to issue that citation on a review of the video evidence. That said, the bill does specifically prohibit that being a third-party private contractor who issuing the citation. It must be done by a trained public staff member.
Thank you, Mr. Folley. Representative Torkelson, did you have one more follow-up here?
Mr. Chair, just a comment. You know, we all want better safety, but we are venturing into a bit of a minefield here. The track record on this in Minnesota is not good, and this bill needs to be very, very carefully constructed in order for it to possibly have any chance of working. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Torkelson. And we'll take one more question and or comment from Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be super brief so we don't get off schedule here. But I am very leery of any kind of, I understand that you have an officer or a public safety professional reviewing the video, but it's still definitely a step too close to automatic enforcement that I, that is one of the things I really like about Minnesota, particularly left-leaning Minnesota people are generally very, you know, civil or liberally minded, trying to keep cameras out of our lives. I don't want us to be more like a state with Illinois where there's a camera every 10 feet. Now, hopefully we don't get their crime issues as bad, but this on speeding, I don't like the idea that this opens a door to automatic enforcement. Eventually, that will be what it is in my view. And I'm just very concerned about that going forward, regardless of cameras for anything, not just speeding. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative West. I do not see any further hands up, so I will give the last word to our author, Chairman Long. Thank you very much also for your bill, and love to hear your closing statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the discussion today. I agree with Representative Torkelson that we need to narrowly craft the bill to make it work, and I think we've tried very hard to do that here. We've had a couple of good questions that I'm happy to follow up on today, and I really appreciate the discussion.
Thank you. And with that, members, we will lay over House File 4242. I appreciate, Chairman Long, your interest in working with the concerns that have been raised and maybe making possible tweaks if necessary to your legislation. Okay, members, so our next bill on the calendar is, let's see, we have a House, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Howe, I'm having a little technical issue.
Mr. Chair, this is John. House File 2295.
Sorry, House File 2295, and this is from Representative Bernardi, and this is related to work zone safety, and we have a couple of amendments. First, I believe it's a DE4, Representative Bernardi?
Sorry, DE2, Mr. Chair.
DE2, and let's consider that first, and then we will proceed.
Mr. Chair, this is John.
Yes.
I believe that A2 amends the DE2. So
okay, I now just have the sheet here. So we will consider that amendment first. So Representative Bernardi, why don't we our motion is to lay this bill over. Again, we have some, there's a fiscal issue here. And let's see, I just have the DE2 here. So, but the oral, you want to do the oral amendment first, the A2? Is that the issue?
Yes, here? Mr. Chair.
Okay, sorry about that. Chair Bernardi, proceed.
Well, thank you very much. And this is an amendment that pushes out the date by 1 year because the report as well, the pilot program is going to start a year later than we originally had intended. And so we need to move out the when the pilot program starts and when the report starts. And what I'll do is have Mr. Burris just read the amendment. He did draft something. And so we have the language right in front of us.
Okay. And Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, so what I have for an oral amendment is page 5, lines 22, 25, and 31, delete 2025 and insert 2026.
Okay, is there a discussion to the oral amendment? Okay, all those in favor of the A2, please signify by saying aye.
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 And all of those opposed, the motion prevails. Now we have the DE2. Why don't you, Chair Bernardi, walk us through that?
Well, thank you very much.
last year we passed a law to have a work zone safety task force, and this incorporates the work of that task force. And so I'd like to get this in the shape in which we will be discussing today. Thank you very much.
Okay, discussion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I just would say, you know, we'll talk about it later, but since that task force was created and the report has come through, it would have been nice for us to have heard that task force report before this bill moving forward. And so my comment is just...
Representative Petersburg, thank you for that. And you are absolutely right. And it's my understanding that we are going to be hearing some of the task force information. That's correct, Representative Bernardi.
Yes.
At the beginning of this hearing.
Right. Yes, we will hear from them.
So a point well taken, Representative Petersburg, and we are going to hear today. I know maybe perhaps it could have been done a little earlier than the hearing, but we are going to still hear that information that you're requesting today, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you.
Members, we have the DE2 before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the motion prevails. We now have House File 2295 as amended before us. Representative Bernardi, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Good morning. I want to start by thanking the committee for the work zone speeding and safety evaluation task force in putting it in last year's omnibus bill. As you will hear from MnDOT today, one of the task force recommendations is to create a pilot project to evaluate the use of safety cameras to reduce speeding in construction zones. We see this as one strategy, one tool to assist in speed compliance by motorists and does not diminish the law enforcement role. Rather, we intend this to supplement their current efforts. This is not a new revenue-raising mechanism. The goal is to change behavior, save lives, and prevent injuries. We want to be sure that our loved ones make it home at night. If we are successful, the fines should diminish over time. We seek to protect individuals working in these work zones and right-of-ways, as well as the motorists and the passengers traveling with them. We also seek to protect our peace officers who are often located in vulnerable locations when enforcing the speeding law in work zones, as well as the other first responders who may be in the work zones. The two most significant changes to this bill versus the past bill, it creates a more collaborative relationship between the Department of Transportation and the Department of Public Safety than previous versions. It also authorizes the establishment of a pilot project, but does not mandate the pilot. This pilot allows the pilot program to begin, and then in 2024, the delay start may be the lack of peace officer personnel to begin right away, and takes about a year before being hired. Public education is a key component. The public must be notified of a speed camera pilot program ahead of deployment, as well as during the pilot and after the pilot project ends, to further the goal of reducing speeding. Public education will include signage and may include posting and pilot projects on the MnDOT website. Warning citations also will be a part of the education. Warnings will be issued for the first 30 days of the project before any citation may be issued. Now I want to turn over to Ken Johnson of MnDOT, who will provide an overview of the task force report.
Okay, Mr. Johnson, thank you so much for appearing before our committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ken Johnson. I'm the Assistant State Traffic Engineer with MnDOT's Office of Traffic Engineering, and I co-led the task force created to develop the Work Zone Speed Management Report. Thank you for the opportunity to update the committee on the findings and recommendations of the report. And just to verify, people can hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you just fine, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So as a reminder, the Work Zone Speed Management Study is a result of a law passed in July 2021 that required MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety to perform a study. It was to include, and there's a lot of language in the slide here, but it's an evaluation of existing legal authority for methods to reduce vehicle speeds and ways to improve safety in work zones, the development of a process to allow contractors to more formally request changes to traffic control plans on projects that have been let, recommendations on changes to current practices to improve work zone safety, and recommendations on changes to state law to improve work zone safety.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes.
This is John. Just want to make sure, were you intending to share your screen?
Yes, I am, and I apologize for that. Let me get the right screen here.
Thank you.
Great. Is everyone able to see it now?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. So on the screen right now is a rough schedule of the process. MnDOT had seen drafts of the proposed statute, and we actually started meeting with contractors in May of 2021 to look at methods to improve work zone safety because we had seen previous versions of the proposed legislation. In July, the law was passed and the task force, a more formal task force was created, and I've got the members on the next slide and we'll see in a second here. September was the month of soliciting additional feedback from a variety of industry partners. The task force then evaluated the feedback received from the industry partners to develop recommendations in October and November. MnDOT and DPS then reviewed the task force recommendations and then determined the agency recommendations that were actually listed in the study. And the study was submitted to the legislature on February 1st. So the task force had broad participation, including general contractors, temporary traffic control contractors, cities, counties, MnDOT, Department of Public Safety, as well as State Patrol, and other interested parties as shown. HDR Engineering was brought on board to help us, MnDOT, with developing the report itself. So work zones are very, very challenging. You know, workers are right next to traffic. This is a picture that I think a lot of us have seen out there on the road as we're driving through work zones. There are complex changes to the roadway, and that can increase risk to the road users as well as workers. And speed limits are very difficult to enforce. I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but it's such tight constraints, and it's very difficult for traditional enforcement methods to actually work within a work zone. In addition, we've had excessive speeding. You know, representatives know this, but speeding's been an issue. It's always been an issue, but it's getting worse. Excessive speeding, which is defined as people traveling well over 50 miles per hour over the speed limit, that has increased since March of 2020. We really need to come up with new approaches in order to get drivers to follow the speed limits to keep themselves, other road users, and workers safe. So I-94 work zone was brought up in previous testimony. And one of the things that MnDOT did, we added specialized equipment to this project to monitor per vehicle speed. We monitor vehicle speeds in general, but it's usually averaged and it helps us to optimize ramp metering and things like that. But so we normally don't collect that. But for this project, we did. And this per vehicle speed was measured at a few locations in the work zone. And this chart shows a typical week of speeds near the Elm Creek rest area along this project. As you'll see, only 36% of drivers follow the speed limit, 64% exceeded the speed limit, and 4% were excessively speeding, again, over 15 miles per hour over the speed limit. Now, 4% may not sound like a lot, but if you look at the numbers here, that was 13,500 vehicles within that week that were driving over 75 miles per hour through our work zone. And there's some additional information about that study that can be found on page 13 of the report, but worth keeping these numbers in mind when I talk about our next slide. So it's a well-known and studied engineering fact that drivers primarily determine what speed they will drive based on the road environment. Speed limits and signs that don't match what a driver would expect to drive on that road are ignored by most drivers. MnDOT, other states, FHWA, the Federal Highway Administration, we have multiple studies that have looked into this. Another issue is that speed limits are particularly difficult to enforce in work zones since there is usually not room to pull drivers over. There's also driver behavior to take into account. Troopers have told us, as part of our task force, that drivers are often confused what to do. Some, when troopers have been trying to enforce the speed limit, have stopped in the through traffic lanes because they didn't know where else to go. So enforcement makes it very difficult. The work zone makes it difficult to enforce. To give you a sense of that, over the past few years, the work zone speed limit citations that were issued, in 2020, only 330 citations were issued in that year. And in 2018, it was up to 406. But compare that within the year across the state to the 13,500 drivers that exceed the speed limit by over 15 miles per hour in that one work zone in a week. And you can see what some of the challenges are. So one of the key things that we looked at in the report is coming up with recommendations to change existing policies. And so we are going to be doing some things, MnDOT and DPS. One thing that we're going to be implementing some more speed management techniques. We're going to try a methodology and test it out called a speed control vehicle, where we will have contractors with beacons and a sign that says speed control vehicle actually control the speeds as people drive through that work zone. But that can be difficult and challenging, and we've got concerns with aggressive drivers causing problems. But what that would essentially mean is if you've got two lanes of traffic that are open to traffic, we would have two speed control vehicles driving side by side at the speed limit to control traffic going through. We're looking at electronic workers' present speed limits so that it's easy for the workers to say, hey, we're working in this area, let's change the number on the sign, and they're allowed to do that per previous statutes. We're also going to look at greater use of detours and full closures to just get the workers, well, to get traffic away from when actually work is going on. We have to do that with limited time frames because we still need to provide access to residences and businesses, but it's something that we're going to investigate a little bit more. So we've got at least 14 strategies in the report that we're going to look at implementing to try to work on improving work zone safety. The one change that requires a change to state law for improving work zone safety would be the speed safety camera demonstration project. Work zones, as I mentioned, it's extraordinarily difficult to do traditional enforcement in them. Speed safety cameras, as mentioned in previous testimony, they're used by a variety of states. And within Minnesota, there's high public support for speed safety cameras to reduce speeds in work zones and school zones. They're identified by the Federal Highway Administration and the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration as a proven safety countermeasure. And both MnDOT and DPS agree that the proposed demonstration project is a worthwhile endeavor. Details about the parameters, which are reflected in the proposed legislation, can be found on pages 43 and 44 on the report. Here's one of the slides that indicate the success. This was done in Maryland. So they have been effective in states that have implemented them. This graph shows the state of Maryland. Before implementation, 7% of drivers were violating the enforcement speed, which that was 12 miles an hour over the speed limit. After implementation, less than 1% of drivers have been going over that enforcement speed. And in summary, work zones cause safety risks for road users and workers. Excessive speeding has substantially increased since the pandemic started. Enforcement is challenging in work zones, and MnDOT fully intends to implement many of the recommendations that don't need a change in state law based on current legislative authority. And then the report indicated the speed safety cameras are effective, but the demonstration program would require legislation. And that's what I have.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Before we get to the next couple of testifiers, I do want to see if there are members of the committee that have specific questions about this report. And again, Representative Petersburg, your point was well taken. I hope this report is helpful in terms of helping to frame this issue, but I will wait and see if anyone has any specific questions about the report. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. In regards to those 4% of people that were beyond 50 miles over, do you have any information on whether or not that was on weekends or other times in which there was no activity or work going on? I'm sorry, I don't mean to indicate that that's a justification for doing it. I just am curious whether or not that's the case, because I know if you're at a one lane follow through, you can only go as fast as the car ahead of you. So that was my question.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, with this project, it was measuring the traffic the entire time. This was one of those work zones that was set as what we call a 24/7 construction speed limit. So we had to change the speed limit for the roadway for user safety, for the road user safety, because of narrow lanes and barrier being on the side. So the overall work getting done was behind barrier for the most part, but we needed drivers to slow down for their own safety to navigate the work zone. So the work zone was set up pretty much that entire time. And so we did record the traffic the entire time within that week.
Thank you.
Members, we have a couple more testifiers. I'm really going to ask the testifiers to be brief. We have Representative Bernardi has one more bill that we need to get to before noon. And so I'm going to call first on Sherry Munyon. Ms. Munyon, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, keeping in mind our time limitations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm hoping to walk through the bill so the components can be understood since they directly relate to MnDOT. So I'm going to try to talk really fast and give as much information as possible. Sherry Munyon, and I'm here today representing Citizens for Safe Work Zones, contractors, unions, and individuals who are connected to family members killed while working in construction work zones. The bill before you is intended to provide guidance for the establishment of a pilot project, but doesn't cover every single detail. That will be the job of the agencies and the vendor when appropriate, such as establishing criteria to select pilot project sites, determining adequate training program for deployment, signage, setting vendor expectations, performance measurements, etc. The bill is crafted to model the concepts which you just heard outlined from the MnDOT Task Force report, and I will walk you through those. The pilot project will include deployment in at least two work zones on state highways, and one being in Greater Minnesota. The agencies may select a vendor, and it is they who will select the one with experience and appropriate technology. The vendor will be paid a flat rate for services, absolutely not based on the number of violations or citations. This is purposeful to alleviate suspicion that there is incentive either on the part of the vendor or the state to issue as many tickets to raise revenue as possible. For further transparency, revenues from citations may not be used to benefit the speed enforcement program itself. Rather, the funds generated from this program will be deposited into a separate special revenue account. At the end of the pilot project, the legislature will determine the appropriate use of these funds. The speed safety equipment is required to be set up under the supervision of a licensed peace officer. Peace officers will make the determination on whether to issue citations in this bill, and they need to have confidence that the equipment is calibrated properly. The contract with the vendor will likely specify how often the calibration will be tested, and this is usually done daily. For the first 30 days of the pilot, only a warning will be issued. After that, a $50 fine. And in this case, again, we would concur that the fine does not have to be punitive to be effective. It just has to be issued. There is no grace in our proposal for the miles traveled speeding over the limit. So if you're any miles over the limit, you could receive a citation. This is an issue that, again, can be established by the two agencies, but there was real concern and reluctance about actually stating in state law that it's okay for you to travel 10 miles over the speed limit in a work zone. A photo is taken of the rear license plate only, no driver photo, same as the other proposal. The owner of the vehicle is responsible for speed citations issued to it. And I'll quickly address a question by Representative Petersburg. If I had a CDL license, and if I did not have a CDL license, and I had a teenager who took my car, I got a citation in the mail, I know who'd be reported and pay for it, and it wouldn't be mom. The provision is made allowing the owner to request a hearing to challenge the citation, so there is an opportunity for defense. The data collected may only be used for two purposes, the speed violation and crash investigations in a work zone. The speed safety camera data must be destroyed within 24 hours unless a citation is issued, and the agencies will determine the length of time that they will hold, the data when a citation is issued. The pilot project is funded with a direct appropriation, and again, the revenue from the citations will be held in a separate account. We also include an independent evaluation with a report due February 1, 2026. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much, Ms. Mannion. And again, we will have, I'm sure, questions. And so if you can stick around for those, that would be very helpful. Our next testifier is Reed Lytle from Safety Signs. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. My name is Reed Lytle, and I work at Safety Signs. We provide the traffic control, the orange signs, barricades, drums, cones, et cetera, on construction projects throughout Minnesota. So I'm here today to represent companies that employ the men and women who are working on actually standing on the roadway next to traffic, like the picture that you saw. So you've heard today, and it's been widely discussed over the last couple of years, that there really is truly a serious issue with the traveling public speeding in work zones. And this is hits home for us because they're speeding next to our workers. Speeding through a work zone, it obviously compromises the worker safety, but it also puts the traveling public at risk. So again, the workers and work zones are my coworkers and all those in the construction industry. And the traveling public is the millions of Minnesotans who drive on our roadways and through our work zones each year. I think virtually, if not literally, every Minnesotan will benefit from this legislation. So we know anecdotally and now factually based on actual data that people generally feel like it's okay to speed through a work zone and significantly speed through work zone. From a two-week period last summer, we have actual data showing about 60% of people were exceeding the posted speed limit. And as mentioned earlier, there were hundreds going 100 to 110 miles in some cases over the speed limit. So from my perspective, this is all about changing behavior, having it known that when you drive through a work zone in Minnesota, you are to obey the posted speed limit. In closing, enforcement will change behavior. This technology will provide MnDOT and DPS a tool to complement and boost their current efforts to change behavior and ultimately, why we're all talking about this, realize less deaths on our roadways. So a pilot program will allow stakeholders, and that's lawmakers, MnDOT, DPS, construction workers, and the traveling public to see the benefits of speed safety that speed safety cameras offer. So on behalf of my family, my work family, the men and women who are standing in the roadways in our work zones, and all of our fellow Minnesotans who drive through work zones, I sincerely really appreciate your support of this legislation to help save lives. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And I believe, I don't know if Mr. Austin is on the line. I have his name down as a possible testifier, but I don't know for sure.
Yes, Mr. Chair, okay. I'm here.
You are here, and you are welcomed to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Paul Austin. I'm the president of the Minnesota Safety Council. A quick reminder who we are. We were chartered in 1925 to keep Minnesotans safe, starting with safety on the roadways as the highway system was built out. I have four quick points to add to this discussion. We support Representative Long and Representative Bernardi's bills very specifically. They represent the opportunity to make some improvements to traffic safety in our roads. In the world I work in, we have a triad, three legs that support the safety table, so to speak. Engineering, where you try to build away the risk. Education, where you try to inform people about their behavior and the impact on their risk. And enforcement. Enforcement is needed to ensure that the other two occur. The last 2 years have been an exercise in what lack of enforcement looks like on the roadways. There are many reasons for this. But the outcome has been more deaths, more injuries, more crashes. So we need to do something about that. We need to add that enforcement piece back in. So why start with work zones? Well, work zones are a convergence of the workplace and traffic safety. How would you like to be standing on the road like Mr. Leadley does when 2 to 40-ton vehicles are moving past you at 50 to 75 miles an hour? It's a high-risk situation. It's a critical space. It would make sense to apply technology to reduce speeds in that space. So why work zone or why school zones? Well, school zones represent a concentration of people and vehicles and pedestrians all moving around in a space at the same time. This includes very young people moving along the roadway, very vulnerable road users. So it's school zones make sense to think about in this equation. And I would propose that it 5 miles an hour means more in a school zone than it even means in a work zone. The Center for Transportation Studies has shown that if I'm driving and I hit a pedestrian with my vehicle and I'm going 27 miles an hour, that pedestrian is likely to die. If I'm going 22 miles an hour, that pedestrian is likely to live. I think this underscores the critical nature of thinking about vulnerable road user spaces as we think about where we need enforcement. So school zones make sense in that context. The last point that I'd like to make is, you know, 19 states have implemented this. They've dealt with the issues that we've talked about. This is not new. We are not walking into a space that no one else has. In fact, it's such a well-known space that the federal infrastructure funding that will be coming to our state along with the other states of the union specifically calls out funding availability for speed safety cameras in work zones and school zones. So we have an opportunity to marry a need with a resource and take some action. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Austin. That concludes our testimony. There are members just in your packets, there are a number of virtual packets, there are a number of support letters from various entities that I would call your attention to. Let's get right to questions, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I appreciate the heads up that Sherry Bunyan gave me yesterday about the DE, and I've been scrambling ever since trying to go through that. And I did find that oftentimes as we get close to deadlines, bills get rushed through and sometimes they're not quite ready. And I think this is one of those that has some flaws that need to be worked on. And I think we have time to do that. And so your decision to hold it over till we get, for example, the fiscal note and some other things done, I think is a very good decision to make. So I'm just going to lay out some of the concerns that I have. They don't need to be responded to, but I want the committee just to be aware of them. First of all, if I missed it, I'm sorry about that, but I don't believe any driving public was included in the task force for this study. And if we had had the, for example, Minnesota Truckers Association, they may have talked about the issue with commercial license, because for commercial license holders, CDLs, it's not about whether or not you can afford to pay the ticket. It's about how many you have before you can actually lose your license. And so it's a very critical thing. But here are the concerns that I have. Now, first of all, the citations that are created and determined are citations are sent out by mail. And it allows for an appeal of that citation. However, the data is destroyed 24 hours after it's created, which means the ability to appeal is virtually non-existent. I think that's an issue. It also says that citations can be given for 1 mile over, which means generally, you can't guarantee that your speedometer is exactly accurate. So if you happen to be right at speed limit, but it's recorded 1 mile over, you're going to get a citation, even though there was no intention of that. The difficulty with the fiscal note, I think, is going to occur because it indicates a minimum of 2 work zones, but no maximum. So technically, it could be every work zone in the state, which is going to make it very difficult to create that work zone. And of course, I think we have the same issues with this bill as the previous in regards to some of the constitutional requirements. So I think for all those reasons, I think it is good for us to hold this until we can resolve some of those issues. With that, Mr. Chair, I will withhold any other further comments.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. And yeah, that is the plan. And maybe based on some of your comments and other concerns, the author and advocates can work through those as well. I would ask either the author or others to respond if you feel it's needed to any of the statements or perceptions that Representative Petersburg shared. I don't see any other hands up, so I think what we'd like to do is we'll take a question for Ms. Kozik, but first let's if anyone wants to respond to Representative Petersburg briefly, we'll do that, and then we'll head to Representative Koznick, and then we'll move on to our last bill of the day. Any response either from the author or any of the testifiers to the concerns raised by Representative Petersburg?
I'll just say briefly, Representative Petersburg and I have worked together closely over the years on transportation issues, and I'm happy to continue working with him on this, and I appreciate his efforts and helping us have the best bill possible before the end of session. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Bernardi. Let's take a question
Ms. Munyon has comments.
Okay, let's hear from Ms. Munyon, then we'll go right to Representative Koznick. Ms. Munyon.
Brief. Yeah, I just wanted to say that the discretion that is provided for the issuing a citation under this bill is the same discretion that law enforcement has today. And so just to make it clear that we aren't setting a different standard, law enforcement will still have discretion. And in the case of this legislation, it is a peace officer who would be making the determination. And then to the 24 hours, I just want to clarify that the records are only deleted in 24 hours. If after review, no citation is issued. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Munyon. Okay, Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just wanted to comment for the committee record, I guess. I think the concerns that Representative Petersburg laid out are and others are very valid, and I'm encouraged that there's some consensus to continue to iron those out, but very emphatically, they do need to be ironed out. But I just wanted to share, I think there's a big difference between the two bills, and I would be more likely to support something in a work zone and to try to make those safer for everybody and alleviate the problems of speeding and dangerous driving in a work zone, as opposed to a city that wants to try to use cameras and encroach in those areas. I think those are can be different types of environments and different sets of issues that are more expansive when you let a city just kind of choose how to do that. Particularly for the city of Minneapolis, they have many issues. Crime being at the forefront, and maybe they should hire more police officers and focus on a variety of things that may also reduce speeding as well instead of cameras. But I would support the continue to work on the speed zone issue and that bill and try to alleviate some of the concerns that committee members have risen. So hopefully we can get there. Be willing to work with the advocates on that as well, but the individual cities stuff, I don't think that's at all ready for prime time. But the other one has a little bit more work to do to clean up, and maybe we can get there, or we'll continue working on it. But I think there's a differentiation between the two, and hopefully we can make some progress.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. Okay, well, members appreciate the discussion on both of these bills. And as I mentioned before, we are laying over House File 2295 as amended. I don't know, Ripson Brown, if you had any quick comments, like people want to work with you, and there's work to do. So
right, yeah, I love working together across the aisle and bipartisanly, and I do want to thank all the advocates, all the survivors and people who've lost their loved ones, and all of the task force members for working collaboratively on this to help save lives, because we really can. And we must do better for our construction workers, state patrol, pavers, truck drivers, electricians, engineers,
asphalt workers and emergency responders, maintenance staff, and these are our loved ones, and we want to make sure that they return home each night. And so thank you, members, for working on this, and I look forward to getting this bill passed this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. So again, the motion we are laying over House File 2994. We have one final bill on the agenda, members, and Representative Bernardi, you can stay in that virtual testifier's chair. You are bringing to us, let's see, House File 2994. And I think I got the wrong House File on the last one. That was 2295 that we laid over. So 2994 is related to active transportation, and I believe you, the motion will also be to lay this bill over, and I believe you have an A1 amendment, Representative Bernardi.
Yes, A1 amendment, it takes it from $50 million appropriation to $10 million. We definitely have a need for $50 million. The program was started last year with $5 million appropriation, and it seems appropriate for this year to move to 20, and then we need to get to the $50 million because there is a great need out there to keep people safe on our roadways.
Okay, I think you said 20, but the amendment is 10.
Oh, sorry, 10.
Yeah. But 10 is still good. 10 is still more than we had last year, so we're it's significant. Members, is there a discussion to the A1 amendment? Signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Good, good, good. I thought I had another 1-0 one on that one. And then all those opposed, the motion prevails. Members, we have House File 2994 as amended before us. And I believe there are two testifiers, Jennifer McGuire and Dorian Grilly. I believe Ms. McGuire is first. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hello, I'm Jennifer McGuire. I live in Minneapolis in Northeast in St. Anthony Village, and I'm a faculty member at the University of Minnesota. Representative Bernardi invited me to come and share a personal story that I shared with her about my experience riding a bike in Minneapolis. I took a job in 2014 at the U of M, and chose a home in St. Anthony Village. It's 2.8 miles as the crow flies from my office in St. Paul campus to my house in St. Anthony Village. And I really hoped to ride my bicycle. I have a long history of bike riding for transportation. I lived in Amsterdam for a year with only bicycle for transportation, and I rode my bike for a decade in Tucson. I mapped out all the various pathways that I could on Google Maps, and I tried each of them. The shortest path via bicycle is 5.1 miles. And there are two or three different ways to get there on bicycle at about a 5-mile bike ride. And every one of them has significant safety concerns. Crossing New Brighton Boulevard with a bicycle is treacherous as about 55 miles an hour. Going all the way down to Fairview Boulevard to cross Highway 36 is frightening. And the other pathway is to take Industrial Boulevard down to Larpenteur and cross the freeway there. The only free, and there's, that's a really difficult bike path with a lot of broken glass and a lot of shipping trucks and containers. The only way to get across the freeway, there's nothing from Larpenteur Boulevard on 280 all the way north and up and around to Fairview at the Rosedale Shopping Center for 36. So that's about a three and a half mile stretch where there's no way to get across the freeway on a bicycle. The other remaining piece I will say about this is I've always ridden my child on a bicycle, and she also lived in Amsterdam with me and rode a bike for transportation. There's a wonderful bike lane, the diagonal bike lane that starts at the golf course near us in St. Anthony Village, and also the Grand Rounds are near here. There's no way to get to them safely from our house. I would never take a kid across the street of New Brighton Boulevard on a bicycle. It's just simply not a safe place for a child to go across the street. So that's my experience. Within about a year of me moving here, somebody died on Stinson Boulevard, which is one of the pathways I could take in a bike accident. And it turned out it was somebody who worked at the University of Minnesota and was commuting to work. And at that point, I quit making efforts to ride my bike. And so I drive to campus every day.
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Our last testifier is Dorian Grilly. And Mr. Grilly, if you could be brief. I realized that I didn't really wanted to go straight to the testifiers to make sure that you got in on time before we have to adjourn. And we're going to do things a little bit backwards here. We'll have Mr. Grilly's testimony, and then we'll have Representative Bernardi just conclude with a couple of comments about her bill. Mr. Grilly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dorian Grilly. I'm the executive director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. And of course, the Bicycle Alliance strongly supports this bill, which appropriates money to the MnDOT Active Transportation Grant Program. And you'll hear from Representative Bernardi that the need is great. I have some slides to share, if you don't mind. I can do so quickly.
So you have just about 4 minutes left, Mr.
Yep. Miller. Yep. No, I and I'll just do it that way if that's okay. I won't even mess.
Sure.
Up.
Absolutely.
So,
we can see the slide.
I just wanted to share with you that the need is all over Minnesota. This is the Safe Routes to School, elementary school education, a map of where it's been going on. We're up to about 1,000 participants. And as you can see from the blue circle in the upper right there, it's about 100 kids per year per educator. So we're up to 80 or 100,000 kids. The next slide is bicycle-friendly communities. As you can see, they range from Grand Marais to Jackson and East Grand Forks to Winona and Rochester. Every one of those communities is thinking that bicycling and walking means that their community, it's a label that says their community is a great place to live and have a business, and that they're working to make sure those businesses are thriving and sustainable. And they're not just small businesses all over Minnesota. Some of our biggest ones, Target is one of the most bike-friendly businesses in the country. 3M uses the fact that they're a bike-friendly business in their recruiting nationally to counteract the Minnesota's the frozen tundra. And Fergus Falls made the top 10 list in the country. And they're up to 21 bike-friendly businesses, so maybe they're in the top 5 list now. Here's the other reason. This is a study that's been going on since the early 1980s of then young adults, now older adults, and they found that riding 2 miles a week, 2 miles three times a week, has this impact on your health. And I think that's just amazing. There should be billboards on the freeway that say these statistics. And one of the most, and I think I've testified to you before, one of the most amazing statistics is that Quality Bicycle Products pays their employees $3 a day that ride to work. About 20% of their employees ride to work 2 days a week or more. And those employees cost half of what the other employees do to insure. And as you can see, that's saving them hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. My last is a purely selfish reason. British scientists a couple years ago found that long distance cyclists, so less than 10 miles a day, though, some of them in their 80s had the immune systems of 20-year-olds. And it's been a great year, couple years, to have the immune system of a 20-year-old. So thank you, Representative Bernardi, for bringing forward this bill. I look forward to working with MnDOT on the implementation of this program. So thanks again for letting me testify.
Thank you, Mr. Grilly. And members, we've been appropriated a few extra minutes to go, not many minutes, but a few minutes after 12. I just want to make sure that members are able to question any of the testifiers or the author. I am going to allow the author to just briefly, you know, we say $10 million appropriated for active transportation. we've heard similar bills last year, but I think it's helpful to go over what that means, the significance of it, and why you're carrying the bill, Representative Bernardi. So if you could briefly, very briefly, mention that, and then we will go to any questions if members have questions. Representative Bernardi.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have numerous remarks I want to make, but I will probably just give an overview of the importance of this. We need, you know, my life's work on this committee has been planning for our most vulnerable users and making sure they stay safe on our roadways, whether someone bikes, walks, or rolls. And we need to make sure that we have every age and ability a person being able to be safe and be able to commute around their community. And so we've learned over the years that every multimodal transportation plan, every climate action plan, and every public health plan says we need to facilitate more biking, walking, and I say rolling, and that the chosen goals and strategies to do that need to be implemented in an equitable way at a local, regional, state, and national level. This bill helps us to fund those efforts to keep people safe and to allow our community members to move about freely throughout their communities and throughout the state of Minnesota. So thank you for that. And I can go into more detail if you would like, but for that, due to time, I just wanted to share those remarks.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. And I will now scan our virtual hearing room to see if members have any questions of the author or any of our testifiers. And I don't see any. So members, if you have any concluding thoughts to share with us before we break for our Friday afternoon.
Well, just thank you. Well, I just want to thank all of our members and everybody who's been on this journey with us to get our active transportation program put in place, getting the $5 million last year, and now let's join together and get this $10 million passed and continue to help keep people safe throughout Minnesota. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Bernardi. And so I will renew the motion that House File 2994, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation bill. Members, thank you very much. We'll be going back to our regular schedule for next Tuesday and Thursday, and then we will have another meeting next Friday. So with that, members, we are adjourned until Tuesday, March 29th, and have a great weekend, everybody.